1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Justin Finch. In New York, where a grand jury has been weighing criminal charges in the hush money case involving Stormy Daniels, police are on alert for unrest in case former President Donald Trump is indicted.
Police in New York City are setting up barricades in downtown Manhattan ahead of former President Trump's possible indictment by the Manhattan District Attorney. The former president said over the weekend he'd be arrested on Tuesday, telling his supporters, quote, protest, take our nation back. But Trump's own spokesman said he had not received any notice of an impending arrest.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. Garbage heaped up on the streets of Paris as workers strike over a proposed increased retirement age from 62 to 64. Japan's prime minister began a surprise visit to Ukraine today, while Chinese President Xi Jinping continues talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. This is ABC News. New details in the case of the Colorado dentist accused of killing his wife, the mother of their six kids. Police now say James Craig allegedly bought arsenic and cyanide and poisoned her using protein shakes. Former FBI agent and ABC News contributor Brad Garrett.
This was planned. It was researched. It was ordered, the poisoning. It shows tons of premeditation, which will all work against him.
Angela Craig was checked into a hospital last week, suffering from headaches and dizziness. She died over the weekend. The coroner in Charleston County, South Carolina, now says a prison inmate who died late last year had E. coli and died from, quote, gross medical neglect. D'Angelo Brown's death now ruled a homicide. One of the country's biggest jelly bean companies warning about shortages ahead of Easter. Sari says the war in Ukraine is cutting supplies of two important ingredients. Justin Finch, ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin leaders are calling on carmakers Kia and Hyundai to make their vehicles harder to steal. Theft spiked in Milwaukee 2 years ago when nearly 7,000 Kias and Hyundais were stolen. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call.
These vehicles are then, after they're stolen, are used for reckless driving, and they're also used in the commission of other serious crimes, sometimes making it more difficult for law enforcement to identify the person who's committing the crime because the vehicle has been stolen.
Today, the Milwaukee Common Council is authorizing the city attorney to find a legal remedy to the problem. The U.S. Energy Department is renewing sustainable energy research at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. The UW could get almost $148 million over the next 5 years. In sports, Wisconsin takes on Oregon tonight in the NIT quarterfinals. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, February 28th. Coming up this hour, rural Wisconsin and Tony Evers' budget proposal. There's a lot in there for Wisconsin's rural economy. There are direct investments in roads, bridges, broadbands, schools, but there's also targeted help for farm exports, modernizing dairy processing plants, helping food pantries to stay stocked with fresh Wisconsin-grown products. We will talk to Lincoln County farmer Hans Breitenmoser a little later on this hour about that. We will check in with weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki, and in our Civic Media homeroom, we'll have Chad Holmes of Bull Falls Radio. As always, you can reach us at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. The spring general election is 5 weeks from today, so we thought we would use the occasion to play back some excerpts from our recent interview with Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz. We also reached out to the campaign of conservative former Justice Dan Kelly, but have not received a response. So if you missed it the first time around, in this excerpt, we asked Judge Protasiewicz to talk about why she chose to run, what the big issues in this race are all about, and why she thinks she's the better choice on April 4th. But we started by asking her about her personal biography.
I was born and raised on the south side of Milwaukee to teachers, really hardworking parents. And, you know, they instilled in me a number of things. You're going to work really hard, you're going to study hard, and you're going to give back to your community. And that's just what I've done. I worked my way through undergrad. I worked while I was in law school. I wasn't able to work my way through law school, meaning I did have debts when I left law school. But what I really wanted to do was continue to give back to the community and work with people. So when I graduated from Marquette Law School, I was very honored to be appointed an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County. And I worked there for a quarter of a century, handling really complicated, you know, criminal litigation issues across the board. Worked at Children's Court. Milwaukee County has a Children's Court separate from a downtown division where we work with children who are, you know, abused or neglected that need services. Children who are in homes that aren't appropriate for them. We're working very, very hard to get them permanency, to have them adopted by, you know, fit, loving, adoptive parents. And so, you know, I had Children's Court work, worked hard protecting victims, worked hard protecting our community for those 25 years, and then I decided to run for judge in Milwaukee County and been honored to have that position since 2014.
What, in your case, what made you say, okay, I'm ready to move from this position with individuals I'm helping or guiding or sentencing all the time to something more like a state Supreme Court?
Well, I'm honored and I love the position that I currently hold. So I want to start out with that. But I would say this. The stakes are absolutely so high in this race. I started thinking about this race last April, and it is not a cliche when I say I got into this race to save democracy for our state. I mean it. Everything that we care about is on the line, and everything that we care about is likely going to come into our Supreme Court chamber. And, you know, I have to be careful with how I structure responses, given that I'm running for a judicial post. But I tell people, about my values and values in regard to our gerrymandering and our maps issue. And I say that everybody deserves to be represented and represented in a fair way and where their votes are meaningful. And you know, Wisconsin's a battleground state. And you look at the state of Wisconsin and you look at how close the statewide races are. And then you look at our maps and you have to recognize that something is wrong and that our Supreme Court allowed that as compared to the dissent, you know, in the gerrymandering case, which I would say that I would agree with. Women's right to choose. I can tell you that, you know, that 1849 near total ban on abortion is going to stand if one of the far right extreme opponents wins this race. I think it's likely that even the results of the 2024 presidential election are going to come into the Supreme Court chamber, just like the results of the 2020 election did. So I think that the stakes are just so incredibly high, and that's why I decided to run.
Final question is about, you know, the general election campaign. Again, we've already seen the national attention that is going to come to this race. What concerns do you have about what that campaign is going to get to be like with national attention if you are a part of it?
I don't know that I would have concerns. My biggest concerns about these races always have to do with outside money coming in. And we know that our United States Supreme Court allowed that in Citizens United. So we have a situation where, you know, I think potentially substantial amounts of money. We already know $6 million has been spent on this race so far, and we're 10 days outside of the primary. So I don't think the national attention is a bad thing. I think that's a good thing for the state of Wisconsin, and it certainly magnifies and has a light on, you know, all of these important issues. It's the spending, I think, is certainly an issue. We're hearing, you know, one group has pledged anywhere between $10 and $30 million to Dan Kelly in this race. It's shocking amounts of money.
It really is. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, thank you so much for talking about your candidacy for state Supreme Court. We really appreciate the visit. And again, that was Judge Janet Protasiewicz talking. This was a couple of weeks ago as we were heading up into the primary election. And again, we did reach out to the conservative candidates, Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro, and then former Justice Dan Kelly, who ultimately prevailed in the primary. And he and Judge Protasiewicz will face off on April 4th in a race that will determine control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, something that conservatives have controlled for 15 years now. We'll get an update from meteorologist Jennifer Bochitsky coming up next. You're up north.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot, woot.
And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help.
find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Radio 92.7 WMDX.
This is the best of Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. I'm not really here, though this is still really me, just in digital form. Anyway, back to another segment from not that long ago in just a bit. First, here's a live update from Weatherology.
Good morning. Well, it does look like we're expecting to see 50 degrees in the south from Richland Center to Waukesha. A little cooler at the lakefront here for today, with chances for rain here for tonight. Otherwise, few spotty areas of rain, of snow showers possibly mixing with some rain around Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids, Oshkosh as well. Temperatures in the mid to upper 30s today, and dry until tonight and in the upper 30s around Amory and Baldwin. Still in the 50s in the south tomorrow, chances for rain in the morning hours and kind of drying out until the evening, and with more chances for rain at night. Rain chances more in the central parts of the state throughout the daytime hours, and warmer as well here for tomorrow, lingering in the upper 30s in the west. Then overall a little cooler on Thursday for pretty much everyone as the cold front comes into the area. Chance for rain, snow mixing at times for the central to southern parts of the state. More snow chances in the west around Baldwin. And then for the most part, a quick look at the weekend, starting to warm back up overall here, with temperatures starting to get a little bit closer to even above average here for much of the state.
All right. Well, thank you very much and have a great day.
You too.
All right. That was Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology. And now we are back to Pat.
Tomorrow, Sarah Godlewski's group Women Win Wisconsin is part of a large coalition with other organizations planning a series of at least a half dozen rallies across the state throughout the month of March, designed to give women and their allies a place to show their support for reclaiming the freedom to make their own choices about their bodies and their health care. She'll tell us the where and when of those rallies. Also, Kyle Kaminsky from our sister outlet to Up North News, The Gander in Michigan, will talk about Michigan's 4 years of legalizing marijuana and what lessons Wisconsin could learn from that. So again, that's all tomorrow here on Up North News Radio. We're going to look at the issue of student loan debt forgiveness, but I was reminded before I leave the topic of road conditions in the state. And Aaron, this is something that I don't know if you're, are you familiar with the app Waze, W-A-Z-E?
I am not.
Okay. So now are you, when you do directions, are you more of an Apple Maps person or a Google Maps person? Do you still buy the paper ones at the gas station and fold them every which way?
I wouldn't be opposed to having a paper map in my car or something like that. Definitely have.
But when you're getting direct, when somebody gives you directions to a place, you're typically following one of those Google or Apple Maps, aren't you?
Yeah, I use Google Maps.
You use Google Maps. Okay.
I have an Android phone.
I had heard of Waze, and I know that I'd heard that it's popular out east. It might be out west. I'm not sure, but I knew very little people who used it. During our trip in early January down to Costa Rica, I noticed that the person we were with had a map app on their dashboard, but I'd never seen anything like it before, and asked her about it, and she said it was Waze and that everybody down there uses Waze. And so I've since poked around and taken a look at it, and I'm bringing it up only because as I was looking at the 511wi.gov map, it includes little map indicators for Waze reports. In other words, users of Waze can, you know, tap the screen and report, you know, that there's construction or, you know, something else that's slowing down traffic. And so it's just got me thinking out loud as to whether, you know, Waze is something that's in use more often around here than I thought, or if it's still something that's rather, you know, nascent out here in the Midwest compared to the coast. So I just wanted to see your thoughts on that as I was looking at the road condition reports. The United States Supreme Court is going to be taking up the case of student loan debt and the arguments over one of the more ambitious pieces of executive action in the Biden administration's history. And that would be a plan that would wipe out about $400 billion in student loan debt. using the coronavirus pandemic as a hook. Now, look, setting aside the coronavirus pandemic for a second, just on the issue of student loan debt, which now is something like $2 trillion and has absolutely crippled the younger parts of the middle class because student higher education costs have gone through the roof since people in my generation went to school, when you could afford to go to school based on a summer job. But the failure of politicians over the years to have student aid, financial aid, keep up with the cost of higher education has led more people than ever to have to take out loans, loans that are taking longer and longer to pay back. And as they do, banks benefit, federal government benefits, but that's also money that could have been used by these younger families to buy a home, to buy a new car instead of the 10-year-old one that they got in high school and they're still putting mileage on, and so forth. And so advocates, long before the coronavirus pandemic, have been saying that if the federal government were to forgive and write off a certain percentage of student loan debt, that it would be it would provide true economic impact. It would be a real economic stimulus package. So just keep that in mind, that when you hear about the coronavirus pandemic and this Supreme Court case, there have been people long before the pandemic making the case that we have basically let student loan debt get far too high in this country, and that by forgiving some of it, you have an economic stimulus tool. Okay, being whether that be the case or not in your mind, the administration has been using a law from 2003 called the Higher Education Relief Opportunity for Students Act. It's shorthand the HEROES Act. And this was passed in 2003, around the post 9/11, the Iraq War, giving the Secretary of Education the power to waive or modify any regulatory provisions that would protect borrowers who are affected by a war or other military option or national emergency. Well, there's no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic was a national emergency. In fact, Donald Trump said so. While president in March of 2020, he declared the pandemic to be a national emergency. And at the time, the Trump administration invoked the HEROES Act to pause student loan repayment requirements and to suspend the accrual of interest. And that, of course, continued into the first year of the Biden administration, when the vaccine was just coming on board. We were still losing thousands of people a day, were losing their lives of all ages, of all walks of life, as we were waiting for this vaccine to be developed and take hold. So the Biden administration continued all of this. But then last August, the administration said it was going to switch gears, end the repayment pause, and instead forgive $10,000 in debt for individuals who earn under $125,000 a year, or $250,000 per household. And it would be $20,000 worth of relief for those who got Pell Grants from low-income families. And I'll quickly make the personal note that I'm one of those people from way back in the day, in the early 80s. The only reason I could afford to go to college, coming from a family that was flat broke for generations, was because of Pell Grants. And I have repaid that exponentially in the higher taxes that I am able to pay, because my income is so much better because of the higher education that I received. So there's already a soft spot in my heart for people who get Pell Grants, are willing to work hard, graduate, take that education, and become taxpaying citizens in this country. And so you already have people from Pell Grants and other forms of student aid seeing some relief from the Biden administration. Well, enter the Republicans, who want to make the case that that the law should not apply, that it's overreach on the part of the Biden administration, and that the Biden administration is relying too hard on things that do not have explicit congressional authority. And in fact, the court has started to insist more on clear congressional authority, something that it calls the major questions doctrine. And back in June, the court invoked this major questions doctrine in a decision that curtailed the Environmental Protection Agency's power to address climate change, because without clear congressional authorization, the court said the agency could not take that action. Chief Justice John Roberts employed the phrase for the first time and said that it was meant to address a particular and recurring problem in his view, and that is agencies asserting highly consequential power beyond what Congress could reasonably be understood to have granted. And it's that same doctrine, that same conservative originalist intent doctrine, that has allowed the court to rule that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, was not authorized to impose a moratorium on evictions, and that OSHA was not authorized to tell large employers to have their workers vaccinated against COVID-19 and so forth. But again, that originalist point of view on what agencies can or can't do in their lane of, you know, what they're working on, what they are charged to do, this is problematic to me. And I simply use the same language that I use all the time when people talk about original intent, and that you should only be able to do whatever is explicitly spelled out. And that is, I guess airplanes are illegal. I guess we can't have an Air Force because airplanes weren't in the, you know, they weren't written into the Constitution because they didn't exist. Man didn't know how to fly back then. We have always taken into account the changes in society, the advances in society, while still respecting the lanes with which you are governing something, whether it's the transportation department or, you know, OSHA or the EPA or what have you. But this very conservative majority on the court is quite likely to strike down student loan debt forgiveness, because what was a national emergency in 2003, in their mind, isn't a national emergency in 2023. And that's just wrong. Back with Hans Breit and Moser after this. You're up north.
If you're just joining us now, worry not, the ghost of Kreitlo Past will be back with us shortly.
Is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Justin Finch. In New York, where a grand jury has been weighing criminal charges in the hush money case involving Stormy Daniels, police are on alert for unrest in case former President Donald Trump is indicted.
Police in New York City are setting up barricades in downtown Manhattan ahead of former President Trump's possible indictment by the Manhattan District Attorney. The former president said over the weekend he'd be arrested on Tuesday, telling his supporters, quote, protest, take our nation back. But Trump's own spokesman said he had not received any notice of an impending arrest.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. Garbage heaped up on the streets of Paris as workers strike over a proposed increased retirement age from 62 to 64. Japan's prime minister began a surprise visit to Ukraine today, while Chinese President Xi Jinping continues talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. This is ABC News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Dear Hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
He just takes the tractor another round and pulls a plow across the ground.
And again, a happy birthday to Jason Aldean, turning 46 years old today. Hans Breitmoser is back. We haven't been able to talk to Hans in a while. He's been a traveling man. As dairy farmers are wont to do this time of year when you can have somebody else milking, but there's no field work to be done. Hans, good to see you again. Have you had a good few weeks here since our last visit?
Yep, you bet, Pat. Back in the colder climes here, but happy to be back.
Yeah, I you know, it's something, again, being married into a dairy farm family, there's rarely a day off, and so when you get that chance, you want to make the most of it. So glad you got to, and it's good to talk to you again. It's our first conversation since Governor Tony Evers introduced his budget proposal. Again, for folks not familiar with the state budget process, the governor of any party, whoever it is, proposes a budget. Normally the legislature uses that as a base and takes things out and puts things in and turns it into something. Republicans for now, this is the third Tony Evers budget, and in all three have engaged in the disrespectful motion of taking the Evers budget and putting it into a garbage can and saying, "We'll start with our own base, thank you very much." And that's fine. That's their right to be, you know, political jerks if they want to, but it doesn't mean we can't talk about what the governor has proposed. and the things that could be good and that Republicans in the legislature would be well advised to pay attention to because they would benefit their mostly rural districts. And so we're going to talk a bit about that with Hans this morning. We'll start with the things that we know, you know, off the top, the things that everybody can kind of lay their hands on. You can touch a bridge and a road and a school and things like that. And although the big city projects get a lot of attention, you know, the Marquette Interchange in Milwaukee back in the day and things like that, there's no shortage, Hans, of roads and bridges and other infrastructure in rural Wisconsin that would benefit from continued investment by the state budget.
Oh, that is so true, Pat. And having been on the county board for 10 years up here in Lincoln County, that was, I mean, we were talking about potholes all the time. So yeah, money that gets invested into infrastructure is a good investment. And I don't know why that has to be so politically charged. Again, it's just a symptom of where we're at today. So if the Democrat says one thing, the Republicans are going to be against it and vice versa to a certain extent. So, but that's so unfortunate because, you know, I've said all along, all this infrastructure, regardless if you are farming or have any other kind of business, or if you're just trying to get to work, is important. And the broadband is hugely important. So these are good investments. And the other thing that I think that our politicians and policymakers need to remember is that this money that's invested goes directly into our communities. These dollars bounce around in our communities. All too often we have this conversation saying, well, we're going to spend all this money like it's magically going to disappear. But that's not the case at all. These dollars reproduce to beat hell when you stick them into infrastructure projects. All those guys that are working on those roads, they're buying gas, they're hitting the taverns after work, and those monies are moving around.
And there is no doubt that there was a time when Republicans were the party of infrastructure. One need only look at Tommy Thompson. And it's not just about Highway 29, but he understood the value from rural Wisconsin of investing in these things that, like you said, now they just kind of lump everything into spending. And then they say, well, we don't know how these other things. Again, you can't wish these things into existence. You have to have the leadership to actually spend the money to do it. Now, the same can be said with things that you can't really put your hands on, but are just as critical. For example, we have tremendous workforce needs in the state. We have a labor shortage. Part of that is because childcare is becoming less affordable all the time to families. Affordable housing is not nearly the big city problem it is compared to rural areas where, you know, if a business or a manufacturing plant, you know, wanted to expand and add workers, you know, those potential workers come and find that there'd really be no place to live around their area. You could add vocational training to the mix so that people could come in and be ready to work right away. These are all things that are in Governor Evers' budget proposal. And again, Hans, it seems like these are the kinds of investments. If you were saying, what do you need to do in rural Wisconsin? You'd include these intangibles in your budget as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we see that in our area. We've had, sort of an affordable housing shortage for many years. And that does leave our local businesses struggling because, they'll put together a package and make it, so that they can attract employees. But if the employees can't go, if they can't move in, then it's a non-starter. And I would take that a step further. The other thing that was interesting is this idea of taking 20% of the state sales tax to aid local governments. And again, having been in local government, that's a big one. That's really big because like here in Lincoln County, our county board ended up getting rid of extension, for example. And our rural school systems are also struggling and have been for years. These are the kinds of things that if we can get dollars at the local level to, keep these types of infrastructure, things like extension and so forth in place, it makes our rural areas attractive to young people who are starting families and have to put kids in school and want to have resources for kids like 4-H and that type of stuff. Those are, again, like you said earlier, they're intangible. They're not as obvious as, laying a mile of blacktop, but they're so very, very important for rural areas to be able to, get some folks to move back to the rural areas rather than everybody migrating to the larger metropolitan areas.
Exactly. And then we also can't forget the healthcare aspect of it. The governor has again tried to get the legislature to understand that accepting the Medicaid funding, Wisconsin's one of only 12 states that is burning money rather than providing health care to a lot of folks across rural Wisconsin who could use a more affordable health care coverage.
Yeah. And I've been saying that for years. I mean, that should be simple, low-hanging fruit. Again, if we could get the politics out of it. But when you start talking about the money people spend on healthcare and how those dollars could be better spent if they had them better used in our communities and so forth, it just, having affordable healthcare is the most liberating thing that young families and people who are looking to start businesses can possibly have. It's so easy, and it's right there in front of us, and it would solve so many problems, but we just can't get over that hump for silly political reasons, and it's very, very frustrating.
And you're right, it is just silly political reasons. One that would be, I guess, controversial, but I'm sure that much of rural Wisconsin is aware that there are many undocumented immigrants here. Frankly, our farm economy might very well collapse if they all went away. And so the governor is proposing allowing those who are in the country, who maybe came with their parents, so they were too young to document themselves, but here they are, and allow them to pay in-state tuition rates at UW system schools. And I just talked, Hans, in the last segment about coming from a low-income family and how Pell Grants and other financial aid helped me earn an education and become a productive Wisconsin taxpayer, and why you wouldn't want that for the children of immigrants so that they too would have a greater chance to become, you know, tax-paying citizens of the state. I don't see the reason why not to, again, unless, like you said, it's silly politics.
Well, it is silly politics, and then it takes it to another level of silly, xenophobic, just stupidity in general. Again, if we look at education the way we used to look at education and view it as an investment in our future, then, you know, it's no different than saying to a childless couple, well, of course you're expected to pay taxes to help support the local school system, because guess what? Those young people are going to be the people who are going to be generating the dollars that move around in the economy and take care of you and in your old age. That was the agreement for many, many years in this country, and it worked really, really well. I mean, the reason the United States got to where it was largely because of affordable public education. Or accessible public education. If the affordability part of it was taken care of by our tax dollars, because we understood that was good investment. So to deny that to people who, you know, whose parents have, you know, a different background is just silly. It just, again, look at it as an investment, and it will pay, you know, 100-fold.
There's a lot of these are big picture items that have both, you know, rural and urban impacts. There are other things that are specifically targeted toward the farm economy and the rural economy. And Hans, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to read through several of them at once and then just give you the opportunity to pick any one of them or comment overall about them. For example, there's going to be $2 million for the Wisconsin Initiative for Agricultural Exports to support dairy and crop and meat sales overseas. It provides export education, helps dairy processors engage in key international trade shows and marketing campaigns. There is $1.5 million in funding for the Dairy Processor Grant Program. There is $30 million directed to the Food Security Initiative that helps support food banks and pantries so that they're getting fresh Wisconsin-grown food in there, not just processed food. And then there's $15 million for the Dairy Innovation Hub. This is run at 3 UW campuses with a mission to produce nutritious dairy foods in an economically, environmental, and socially sustainable manner. And that hub has funded more than 130 projects. These are all the little things that don't get talked about much when we talk about state budgets or federal budgets, but that's where the work gets done in these individual lines. And the, you know, the fight becomes, first off, from the line, is this worthy of funding? And then on the line, what should that dollar amount be? And I just wanted your own thoughts on some of those targeted investments in the rural economy.
Well, I think they're all good. I mean, I think it makes sense for us, knowing how important ag is, and specifically the dairy part of ag, how important that is to our economy in the state of Wisconsin. It's huge. Nothing comes close to it. So it's important that we, you know, that we have public policy that's supportive of that. And I think also not from just from the economy standpoint of it, but just from rural fabric kind of cultural standpoint, to, you know, maintain that ag bent and that dairy culture, I think is important. I think, you know, in order to do that, we should be looking for, you know, these export opportunities, and also, you know, looking at how we can do these things environmentally friendly and, you know, in an environmentally friendly way and so forth. So I think these dollars are well intended in terms of looking at how we maintain an industry in a sustainable manner going forward, because we see how important that industry was to our state and all the people in our state. So it makes sense to be supportive of that. You know, if politicians and policymakers are in a position where they're picking and choosing, I think some of the things that we spoke about earlier are more important, simply because there's no industry there that can take care of those projects, those infrastructure projects and so forth. You know, public school funding and so forth are things that are more broadly taken care of historically, obviously, because they're not specific to one industry. So I would certainly prioritize those. But I think some of the Dairy Innovation Hub, for example, I think are important to the state, and I think they do have an impact indirectly on everybody in the state.
I think they do as well. And then, you know, a couple of other quick notes. There would be an Office of Environmental Justice to combat pollution and water contamination, because, again, most farmers want to be good stewards of the land, and expanded access to mental and behavioral health services in order to reduce suicide rates, a special problem across rural Wisconsin. Hans Breitenmoser, good to reconnect with you. Thanks again. Glad you had some great travels, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. When we come back, we will talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio and find out what he's been covering up in the Wausau area and what he's got coming up in terms of all the high school sports that he covers as well. That's all right after this break. You're up north.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
All right, here's Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio joining us from up in the Wausau area, covering the veritable truckload of news and the double truckload of high school sports this time of year. So we never run short of conversation fodder with Mr. Holmes. How are you today?
Doing good, Pat. How about you?
Really good. Really good. Let's start on the lighter note first, because we've got some news notes about the school consolidation plan in Wausau. We've got sports to talk about. But I don't want to forget, before we get to talking here, we've made note that it's Girl Scout cookie time. And I just want to know, in the Holmes household, what do you end up stocking up on? Are you a thin mint guy, or one of these more exotic flavors out there?
I am the chocolate stripes. I've always enjoyed the
Samoas or the Caramel Delights, whatever, they've gone by both names. So that's the one we're talking about.
Yes, it is.
Oh God. I
enjoy those.
I could eat those just all the time.
Well, that's it. Once you start, you go through an entire roll right away.
Oh, it's so easy.
You don't have one or two. You just keep going. It's like,
Find yourself going, you just had a third one, so what's wrong with a fourth one?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And then we were talking as well about, what new flavors would you create? And I have to admit to a stunning lack of creativity on that one. I would like maybe take my favorite candy bar, which is Kit Kats, and turn that into a cookie. Or, other people might be more ambitious, maybe one that tastes like Guinness beer. I don't know. But think about that. We'd like your thoughts on what you would do. And what, here's another one. What are the cookies that would be quintessentially Wisconsin? And please do not suggest a bratwurst flavored cookie. I'm not down with that, but maybe there's something else. Mr. Holmes, you are so busy. And even on your show this afternoon from 2 to 4 on Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau, you are going to be talking about the still controversial school consolidation plan. We had been calling it a proposal, but it is a plan now that the school board has voted on it. And yet that's not stopping some folks, quite a few folks in the community, from saying maybe this shouldn't be advancing so quickly. What is being proposed, and what kinds of things are you expecting to talk about this afternoon?
Well, there's a couple of tracks actually today, because last night there was another school board meeting it was a committee, but the entire board was there with the exception of one. And they were talking about where they're going from here. They talked about transportation issues. They talked about the potential of a non-binding referendum. And along that line, there is a Wausau parent and resident, Nora Brown, who has organized a petition, and over the last about 4 days or so, and according to the last numbers I saw, that was early yesterday, they had about 1,100 people who had signed the petition, and she's against this consolidation plan, and I'm going to talk to her about what she is doing, what she has found out, because obviously when you get all these folks together, they discuss. And I think there are some people that have different problems with it. It's not all just one problem. It's, these people have different, some may be against the plan itself. Some may be against the time frame itself, against the communication aspect of it. So we're going to talk about that and find out what she ultimately wants. And also last night there was discussion about this idea of having a non-binding referendum. No decision has been made, but also talking about surveys of getting people's ideas as well, because during the process, they're going to continue the process. They've decided on this road right now, but in terms of, you know, there's still possibilities of changes as we move forward.
Okay. And, you know, when we talked about that last week, you know, essentially the thrust of our conversation was, look, the vote has been held, kind of a no backsies thing, you know, unless there's another school board election and the membership changes. But, you know, the plan has been voted on, and, you know, let's see how the implementation rolls out. But even having said that, the implementation of any given plan is going to change as it goes along, and that not just because of, you know, cost overruns or construction delay, you know, all the usual factors, but frankly, sometimes other ideas come up where a school board or administration can say, you know, on second thought, maybe we make this adjustment to the plan. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, while I'm sure there are still folks that would like to put up just a full stop sign, maybe there are some other folks saying, okay, if this is going to go forward, could we at least try this route instead? Do you think that there's that sentiment out there, or is there still very much a show of support for how do we stop this thing entirely? And I'm thinking the advisory referendum might be a tactic toward that end.
Yeah, I think somebody that I trust, I'd spoken to just after the vote occurred, and I kind of agree with this. I think there's a sense out there that there's maybe a third of the people that are okay with the consolidation plan and that see the reasons for it. There's probably a third of the people out there that are against it. They like the current community schools, especially with the elementary schools and also the two high schools. And then there's probably another third that are not engaged. And even last night, I'm watching this meeting. I got home and it's on. They stream it, so I'm watching it, and I see there's like 90 people watching it. So again, I know that they have an opportunity to watch it later and get information later. But again, that's always one of the things that is a factor. I mean, how many, even with a referendum, and there was a discussion last night about representative democracy. And again, that's a factor here as well, that the folks that have the most information are the ones on the board, and we decide to elect people to represent us because everybody has a lot on their plate in their everyday lives. So, I mean, again, I just, when I talk about this on the program, I talk about there's so many layers to this, and it's about trying to get as much information about, you know, where people stand on it. Also, where the board is coming from and where the future is going. And I think you hit it on the head. There's going to be changes. This is not, you know, in stone. The whole process is, I think, going to be, you know, there may be subtle changes. There may be significant changes. It's going to be interesting to see.
I think one of the most unfortunate terms in politics is low information voter, because you do have a hardcore group on one side, a hardcore group on the other side, and you're fighting over those folks in the middle who either by circumstance of their life or by intent don't take in a lot of information about an issue. And so you're trying to sway them one way or the other with political ads or personal visits or whatever. And rather than low information voter, I kind of think of them as the, you know, the busy people. And there's still a block of those who are saying, what is all about? And it's where we really appreciate your willingness to shed some light on this on a weekly basis. I got about 10 seconds for you to tell me if there's any big headlines in high school sports or what overall is keeping you busiest this week.
Oh, we got state hockey coming up this week. Mosini from our area, first time in 15 years, making it down to state. And then basketball, girls and boys now in the playoffs.
All right, Chad Holmes, Bull Falls Radio. Good to talk to you. Have a great day. Take care.
You too, Pat.
All right, and that'll do it for us for a Tuesday. Have a great day. You can follow me at Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook. Otherwise, we'll see you back here.
Dear Hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.